There is reporting that's coming out, and it's being published at the Washington Post, at the Politico.com. There are stories out there all over the place about this, about how the Trump White House is being pressured on matters of social. Here, matters. I'll give you the quotation as you'd read it in the National Review online or one of these other rags that purports to be conservative. Social conservative issues are being marshaled and guided by Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner. If you don't know who that is, that basically is Mr. and Mrs. Jared Kushner, one of them being Trump's daughter. Many of you were taken aback a bit when the now president, when he was campaigning back in August of 2016, when Ivanka made she gave a speech at the RNC, and then she followed it up with another one on how the federal government's social policy should be towards pregnant women and to expectant mothers. So, and you'll recall here some of us saying that that doesn't sound like a 10th Amendment president to me. as a matter of fact, it sounds the exact opposite. And we all should recall as well that there was a statement that came out after the election on November the 13th, I can still remember the day, that purports to show or to say that Donald J. Trump understands there are some things that the federal government should not be doing. Now, I'm going to take the angle here that what's coming out of the what's being leaked out or what's being spread out there so that we can read it or so that reporters can get a hand on it and then publish it or blog it out or whatever they wish to do, that this is happening and it's directed at current federal government employees, not directed at you or not directed at me. I think that that's a distinction that is worthy of making. But as the old saying goes, the best way to lead is to lead by example. So the example is set inside the royal family, if you will, and then policy flows or comes from there. Well, then there's reasons to be concerned here, folks, but make no mistake about it. Some of us also have been cautioning you that while the change that the Trump administration has already heaped upon the deep state is positive, you know, bear in mind that there still is a deep state. And the deep state is not just, it hasn't gone anywhere. It may have been kept at bay. As Chris Ferrara says, we've inched away from the abyss. So we have this headline. And then here's another one. There's a battle line that's also been drawn between the state of California, the state of Minnesota, the state of Washington, and a few other radicals out there that basically purport to say that the federal government, if it's headed up by someone that those states don't agree with and that they didn't vote for, that they don't have to obey it. I must say that this is a positive development, although it all comes from the wrong quarter. Here's a headline from the Washington Post yesterday, how Washington State became the epicenter of resistance to Trump's agenda. Now, if you read this story, you might come away going and think, hey, those guys are basically nullifying, using the 10th Amendment and are nullifying these acts that they disagree with. And some of you may even take some consolation out of that. Go, hey, they can nullify things. Why can't we nullify? Here, if the governor of Washington State can get a federal judge to intervene on his behalf and to proclaim his state basically as a sanctuary state and we'll do whatever in the Hades we want when it comes to immigrating Muslims or anyone else from anywhere else on the freaking planet, you've just stated then my take upon, and James Madison's take upon and view the original understanding of the Constitution that a state reserves the right, a municipality reserves the right to determine who is and who is not an alien friend. And if they want to admit an alien friend in, and we're not at war with the country in question, well, then you can admit an alien friend in. This is a very federal principle here. I don't necessarily disagree with it. However, this is where it becomes dicey. I thought that the whole purpose of having the 320 million strong Blobistan federal government union that we currently have, and so we can have one-size-fits-all solutions to issues, national pressing issues, like immigration. Isn't it ironic that ultimately what may cause a political realignment, unlike any seen since the War of Northern Aggression, may be caused, and I just think about this for a moment. California is threatening to secede. Many people, Bill O'Reilly included, when he interviewed the president yesterday, pre-Stupid Bowl, you might have noted that if you watched the interview, that when he asked Trump about California, he dismissed. It's being dismissed that California could actually secede. Oh, they're not going to leave. You know, and the president, and Trump was even like, believe me, we don't want to punish them. We don't want to punish sanctuary cities, or sanctuary states. Believe me, Bill. But if we have to cut them off, we're going to have to cut them off. Now, this is unprecedented. You have a state, three states now, that are basically claiming powers that you and I, most of you people listening right now, have been saying the states always had. My question is, if California and Washington State can just say, we went to the all-you-can-eat buffet. We don't want what's on bin number two there. So, we're just going to ignore this executive order on immigrants and this executive order on that and this executive order on this and maybe even a congressional statute or two. We're not going to enforce those. Why then do the spineless weenies in the states buckle when they're told to enforce the Obergefell decision? Now, some of you people remain convinced and fixated on the idea that these concerns over social policy are much ado about nothing. It doesn't have anything to do with politics, and we just get back to the Constitution, everything's going to be right with the world. Well, what is it that Washington State and California State are doing? Well, it sounds to me like they're getting back to the Constitution, and what they're basically doing is what the 10th Amendment Center calls nullification. They're basically saying that this is an illegitimate exertion of authority, and they're not going to obey it. We should probably, give them some applause. Now, the question as to whether or not it's an overreach or not, that's a different conversation. We're going to have it just a minute here. But the idea that the state of Washington, again, or the state of California, can stand up to the federal monstrosity and tell it no is long overdue. I hope they keep doing it. As a matter of fact, I hope California actually just starts pronouncing that, you know what? We're not listening to you guys on anything. And you need to get your silly military bases out of here, too. Because we're going to have a referendum, and we're going to Cal exit. There's some things going on out there, folks. We got to talk about it. Here's another headline. Seattle judge used broad power to halt executive order. You want to talk about unprecedented, folks. It doesn't get any more unprecedented than this. Federal judges don't often issue nationwide orders. I'd like to ask the question, since when, under what rule, under what constitutional precedent is a single solitary federal judge? You know why they have district courts? Does anyone know why? Like here in New Orleans, I think we're the third circuit, the third or the fourth, I want to say. In California, infamously is the Ninth Circuit. I think that Washington State is probably part of the Ninth Circuit. There obviously are the other 10 or other 11 circuits or 9 circuits that are out there. Why are there circuits? Why are they divided into different courts? It decries or it runs contrary to the opinion or to the point of view that a single solitary federal judge can tell out in California, can make ruling or make law or make policy that the rest of the entire 320 million person blobistan has to obey. Why divide it into districts? Well, the point of dividing it into districts is because it's supposed to, if the purpose of a federal judiciary, if we went to the Constitution, something that Judge Robart the First, the new emperor, did not do. If you went to the Constitution and we read Article 3, you get a little insight on that. Notice the wording here. And of course, when I quote the Constitution, I quote it in air finger quotation marks because nobody cares about it. And no one cares what its original intent really is or was. Article 3, Section 1, quote, "The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The judges, both of the supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during times of good behavior and shall at stated times receive for their services a compensation which shall not be diminished during their continuance in offices." Now, what does that say? That basically says judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as Congress may. They don't have to construct. The judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority, to all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, and consuls, to all cases of admiralty, blah, 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 blah. Then it defines treason in all cases affecting ambassadors. You get that one. Trial of all crimes except in cases of impeachment shall be by jury. The idea then of the Article 3 judiciary is that there would be controversies that would arise under the Constitution, principally in matters of foreign and legal in foreign legal matters, meaning that we may have trade deals or other dealings with foreign countries that may wish to do business here in the United States. And if there was a controversy that arose, well, then a federal judge or a federal jury could then be impaneled to hear the case and to see what the Constitution does or does not say about this. These judges that are hearing these challenges to President Trump's executive order don't even approach the Constitution. They don't say anything about it. This clown out in Washington State, Judge Robart, basically said, "Well, I'm doing it because a judge out in Texas did it back in 2010. Nanny, nanny, boo, boo." It's almost like, well, he did it, so why can't I? These people are out of control. This is from the Wall Street Journal. "Federal judges don't often issue nationwide orders, but they have the power to do so. As a U.S. District Judge in Seattle, Judge James L. Robart typically handles federal cases affecting businesses and individuals in the western half of Washington State, an area roughly bordered by the Pacific Ocean in the west and the Cascade Range in the east. But on Friday, Judge Robart expanded his reach." Now, note the wording here. These people are praising this man for expanding his reach. So what did he do? I just claimed he had an authority and a power that he doesn't have, and he just exercised it. And all this is done to do what? To stop the exercise of power that actually does belong to the president